I Eat Green with Bhavani, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Wednesday. Even though it's raining outside here in New York, it is still a beautiful Wednesday, and I am so glad to be here with all of you. I have a wonderful, exciting show planned for today. My guest today is Fran Costigan, who is a vegan chef. Actually, she specializes in vegan desserts, and she will be joining us in a little while. And before I invite her on, I just want to tell you about some things that are going on and talk to you about what's going on in my garden and share a recipe with you. So first off, I want to just let you know, last week we screened, we meaning Slow Food Huntington, my local slow food chapter, we screened the movie Urban Roots out at the Cinema Arts Center, and it was a great, great film, and I recommend everybody who's interested in urban agriculture or interested in the local food movement to see this film. And you can find out more about it on the website urbanrootsfilm.com. And it was just an inspiring film about the urban agricultural movement and what's going on in Detroit specifically. Detroit is one of the cities that at one point I think it had over 2 million people, and now it's down to 700,000 people, something dramatic like that. And with all the people leaving the city, there's lots of vacant land all over within the downtown area, and people are reclaiming that and starting to grow vegetables, and it's really an exciting movement. I mean, there were so many people there out of work that are just, you know, reclaiming this wasted out land and turning it into productive gardens and farms, and the community excitement and togetherness that is coming out of this movement is just phenomenal. So that was a great movie. So I recommend all of you to see that. Another screen that's screening that's coming up here in New York is a screening of a movie called Forks Over Knives, and that's being sponsored by the New York Coalition for Better School Food. And that screening is May 6th and 7th at the Sunshine Cinema in the city. That's on Houston Street. If you're interested in going to that, I recommend trying to buy the tickets soon because they probably will sell out. But the movie will be there through May 12th. So that's Forks Over Knives. I also want to let you know about something that was in the New York Times last week about this ag-gag law. This proposal that is out there to make it illegal for people to film and photograph what's going on in factory farms across this country. And not only do I think it's against our constitutional rights for that to actually happen, but it's just astonishing that they want to protect the people who are causing the crimes and make it a crime to tell us what's going on. So anyway, I sent out an email to everyone that's on my email list about that, a link so that they can sign up to do some action and petition against that. But anyway, it's in the New York Times last Wednesday, so if you're interested in the ag-gag law and trying to make sure that that does not go into effect, I recommend you doing that. And then last week my guest was Amanda Cohn from Dirt Candy, and I'm happy to say I finally ate there, and it was just wonderful. It's such a pleasure to be at a restaurant where, one, I can eat everything on the menu, and I went with three other people, so there were four of us, so we got to try everything on the in the restaurant, because basically they have four appetizers, four entrees, four desserts, and we tried everything, and everything was delicious. To have a meal prepared around one vegetable as the centerpiece is just a great concept. And all the different things you can do with one vegetable, whether you puree it, chunk it, slice it, fry it, it was just a work of art. So if anyone is in for an adventure, I'd recommend trying out Dirt Candy. And I already have another reservation in. It takes a while to get a reservation, 4 or 5 weeks, because it's a small restaurant, only 18 seats. So if you do want to go, plan ahead. And now I want to share my recipe with you. But first, I just want to tell you that I finally put that tree paste on my peach tree. I've been talking about it with all of you for weeks. You know, you want to do it, you know, I wanted to get it on, of course, a month ago, but that didn't happen. But the main thing is you want to do it when the moon is waning so that the problems that I was having with my peach tree, which is some sort of fungus, you treat it when the moon is getting smaller. And I brushed it with this biodynamic tree paste that's made from diatomaceous earth, clay, and cow manure. And my tree just looks absolutely great out there, all gray, the color of clay. And it was just a wonderful experience loving this tree. That's what I felt like I was doing. I was out there in the garden loving this tree, talking to it, and just wishing it well, because the peaches on this tree are the most amazing peaches. And starting last year, it started having some sort of oozing, sticky, sappy type of stuff coming out of the bark. I don't know what it was, but I looked it up and looked in books, and I think it's some sort of fungus. So I decided to treat it with this biodynamic tree paste, and I just think the tree, I felt like the tree was really loving the attention. And, you know, first we had to scrub all the bark with a bristle brush to get any of that stuff off, and also just to loosen up the bark so that it can take in this tree paste. And so I'll keep you all posted. I also made the soil around the tree much larger. So I took away some of the grass and gave the tree a much larger circumference of soil and compost and nutrients. So my tree feels very happy. And so I'll keep you all posted on that. So the recipe that I'm going to share with you today is, I feel a little embarrassed actually sharing this recipe with you, because it is a comfort recipe filled with dairy. And my guest today is a vegan chef, so it will be dairy-free. And I actually tried some of her recipes, and they're great. So this is not an everyday food. This is a sometime food. It's kind of one of those comfort foods. It's a macaroni and cheese that's a traditional recipe in Switzerland. I first made it when one of my clients came back from a trip just saying, can you make this for us? And so, of course, I Googled and I found recipes, and, you know, I altered them a bit. And so this recipe is a macaroni and cheese recipe. It has potatoes and sautéed onions. And, you know, I made it for my fun just the other night, and it was just a big hit, so I want to share it with you. You want to start with 2 medium or 1 large potato that you're going to cut into 1/2-inch cubes, 1 pound of whole wheat elbow or penne pasta. You can also use rice pasta if you'd like. 2 large onions, peeled and diced. Not the huge onions, large like the kind that come in a bag. If you can use one of those huge Spanish onions, 1 onion would be enough. 4 tablespoons of flour, and if you need to do this gluten-free, you can use, like I said, rice pasta, and you can use gluten-free flour. 2 cups of grated cheese, a Gruyere or a high-end Swiss or Jarlsberg cheese would be fine. 2 cups of organic milk, and you can also use a low-fat milk if you'd like. Salt and pepper to taste, 1/2 teaspoon of nutmeg, 1 cup of combination of whole wheat and unbleached white breadcrumbs, 1 to 2 teaspoons of garlic, and salt and pepper. And so what you're going to do is you are basically going to preheat the oven to 375, boil the pasta with the potatoes in it. You can, you know, I love, you know, using less pots and making my steps simple. So you can actually boil the potatoes right in there with the whole wheat pasta. And while that's boiling, fry up the onions in a little olive oil or butter, whichever you prefer, until they're golden brown. And when the pasta is ready, you're going to drain it. And you are going to, meanwhile, make the sauce. And you're going to do that with a roux. So you're going to start with the butter and the flour. Melt the butter into a heavy skillet. Add the flour, whisking it all the time. And then you add the milk into the roux and whisking it the whole time so that you don't get any lumps in there. Then you're going to add the cheese into that milk mixture and mix that around till it melts. Add the salt and pepper to taste. Add a half a teaspoon of nutmeg. And then you're going to, once that sauce is all made, you're going to mix the pasta. It already has the potatoes in it. Add the onions. Pour the sauce over it and mix it all together, and then pour it into a lined, and also you want to oil or spray the casserole pan, but pour the pasta into the casserole pan. Sprinkle breadcrumbs on top, and before you do that, you want to season the breadcrumbs. I saute them in a cast iron frying pan with a little olive oil, some garlic, and the parsley. And season it with some salt and pepper. And then you sprinkle those breadcrumbs on top of the macaroni and cheese and bake it in the oven for about 20 minutes just until it's hot and the breadcrumbs are golden brown. And the other key with this is you serve it with some warm applesauce. And I think I've given you the recipe for making applesauce before, but just to refresh your memory, you just cut up a bunch of apples into a saucepan with either a little bit of water or applesauce. I'm sorry, or apple juice, and you just cook it and steam it until the apples are soft, and then you can puree them with either a hand blender that you can just go right into the pot and blend it, or into the Cuisinart, however you'd like to do it. You can also buy some good organic applesauce if you don't have time to do that. And like I said, this was a big hit, and I just wanted to share that with you. So now I get to invite my guest on, and as I said before, my guest is Fran Costigan. She is the queen of vegan desserts. She's a native New Yorker, and she is internationally recognized as a culinary instructor, author, consultant, and recipe developer, the pioneering vegan pastry chef who marries healthy eating with scrumptious taste. The Fran Factor is a unique ability to transform traditional desserts into modern, healthful, and luscious vegan desserts that satisfy vegans and omnivores alike. And that is true. Like I said, I tried out a few of her recipes. I made the brownies yesterday to bring into the studio and share with everybody, and they're just great. So, Fran, are you there?
I'm here. Hi, Vivani.
Hi, Fran. How are you?
Oh, very well today, and I'm happy to be talking with you. Thank you for having me as your guest.
Oh, sure. Well, the first time I met you was at New York Coalition for Healthy School Food event at Peter Max's studio this past fall, I believe it was.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah.
I've been thinking a lot about the coalition the last few days, given the fact that they're hosting the event for Forks Over Knives, you know, the 7:45 screening.
That sounds like such a great movie. I went onto the website after you sent that to me, and if anyone's local and can go, I really recommend it. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to.
Oh, well, maybe, you know, it's, I want to talk a little bit about the movie, if I can, because I have been waiting to see it again since months ago. I saw it at a preview screening in New York City that was absolutely sold out, and I made some desserts for the party that preceded the screening. And I'm somewhat familiar with, some of the work and the people that are profiled in the film, but even so, it was just, it's amazing.
Sure, tell us about it.
It's just amazing. The the film really is examining the rather, you know, the we would say profound claim that most, if not all, of the so-called diseases of affluence that afflict us can be controlled or even reversed by rejecting our present menu of animal-based and processed foods. Mm-hmm. And I really want to make the point that this is a very entertaining and very upbeat film. It's not a, you know, it's not a downer. It's a very entertaining and happy film. The major storyline in the film traces the personal journeys of two very pioneering, very brave doctors, Dr. T. Colin Campbell, who is the author of the China Study.
Right, I know him.
And Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn, who was the head of surgery, I believe, at the Cleveland Clinic, which is a very renowned medical center. And his book is Had a Heart Attack, Prove Yourself. And his son, Rip Esselstyn, who is the his claim to fame years ago was this vegan firefighter from Austin, Texas. He's the author of The Engine 2 Diet. Uh-huh. And what's particularly interesting about it is you watch Dr. Campbell talk about his boyhood spent on a dairy farm. He grew up in a dairy farming family, mm-hmm. you know, where milk was the perfect food and so on. And then how he did his research. It is really serious research. Every fact has been checked. It's, you know, you're familiar with the China Study, so mm-hmm. you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Esselstyn started to wonder, as he was doing heart surgeries, he said, people are coming back and they need another heart surgery. What's going on? And how, you know, he found the research that supported this radical idea that food could not only prevent these terrible diseases, but actually reverse them. And they happened to be, Bill Clinton, former President Bill Clinton, was on the Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer on CNN and actually named these doctors as his reason for changing his diet.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, after his second stint, I think it's called a stint or a stent, I don't know.
Stent.
He felt that he wanted to see if he could heal his heart disease in a different way. And people were talking about his weight loss. I mean, he looks great. He said, that's just an unexpected side effect. But mm-hmm. he said to Wolf Blitzer, I want to be part of the 25-year experiment that proves that heart disease can be reversed. And so it's just quite amazing. I mean, I just so enjoyed seeing it. It's very interesting. And it's opening in New York this weekend. It just opened in L.A., and then it's going wide. But the Coalition is hosting the 7:45 screenings on Friday and Saturday nights, this Friday and Saturday nights, after which there'll be a brief question and answer with a panel. I'm on the panel along with Nava Atlas, Alex Jameson, and Victoria Moran. And I'm so looking forward to it. I really am. And I hope everyone will come out to support the film and see it and then draw their own conclusions. But it's certainly...
Well, I'm sure it's going to sell out. Every time I go to a screening at Sunshine Cinema, it's sold out.
Yeah, you know, well, so. I hope so. I mean, Dr. Oz had showed the trailer on his show last week and interviewed the doctor. So it was very, you know, there's been a lot of buzz. Oprah did as well. There's been a lot of buzz about this, but we really want to get people into the theater to see it. So anyone out there, I can, you know, I have the link, which I can find. Can I say a link on air? Can I give a link?
You can.
I'm going to try to do this. It's www.healthylunches.org/events/forks and then -over-knives.htm. And that will take you to the website and the link to the theater, or you can go directly to the theater, of course.
Right.
So
right.
That's,
which is Sunshine Cinema on Houston Street in New York City.
Right, exactly.
So and if you miss the screening, it is being shown until May 12th.
Exactly, and there are many, many showings a day. I mean, starting in the morning.
Great.
So I'm talking about this one because I want to meet you. Anybody out there that comes, please say hello to me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Great. So, well, I wanted to have you on because, you know, as a chef and someone who cooks for so many people with so many different dietary needs and desires, I'm very often cooking vegan desserts. And when mm-hmm. I was at the New York Coalition and I tried some of yours, they just were amazing. And I just, I've made, you know, chocolate tofu mousse and, you know, I've made quite a few desserts, but yours had a more professional touch at the finishing. It just looked so traditional, shall I say,
mm-hmm.
so that, it looked like any other dessert. And I have found as a chef that that's 50% of it. If you're trying to convert somebody over, you know, it has to look like what they expect.
Oh, absolutely.
Otherwise, if it looks healthy and different and pale and unappetizing to you or me, it's going to look like that to someone else as well. And so it's really important that everything looks beautiful, and your stuff was just beautiful.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, there's a reason behind that. When I was in culinary school, I trained at New York Restaurant School many, many years ago, and later on went through the Natural Gourmet program. But I remember learning, one of the chef instructors said, we eat with our eyes, and it's really true.
It is.
It really is. I mean, I happen to like that part of cuisine, you know, setting things up nicely, and I'm not about fussy. I like very simple, but I want things to look beautiful. After that,
absolutely.
Of course, they have to taste good.
Right.
So
no, I'm a chef, but before I became a chef, I went to art school,
mm-hmm.
and so food ended up being my art form. And it's very important that every plate look beautiful. That's one of the things.
Right.
I don't know if you heard me talking about the restaurant Dirt Candy.
I did.
Have
I
you
did.
Tried it yet?
I've been there. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, every plate comes out as a work of art.
And that's right.
Really beautiful.
That's right. And it, you know, that can be done with the most simple foods, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what I specialize in is vegan pastry arts. But when if I'm putting out a plate of, you know, I happen to eat a Whole Foods plant-based diet, if I'm putting out a plate of just beans and a grain and a vegetable, there's no reason that the grain can't be packed into a ring mold. You know, it doesn't take very much. When you just jumble things together,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's not the same. It's not the same.
Right.
So I agree with you about that. And I've had to work hard enough to get in the day, you know, 23 years ago, I was working in a traditional pastry kitchen.
Right.
And when I left, really, because I wasn't feeling well, and I decided that it was time to do some research into why I'd always had stomach aches and so on. I happened upon Anne-Marie Colbin's book, Food and Healing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, yeah, you know, that intuitively it made sense to me that food and health are linked. So I just decided to change my diet overnight, which is not something that I recommend to my students and clients, but
uh-huh.
it worked for me.
Uh-huh.
And virtually, in almost immediately, the stomach upsets that had plagued me my entire life. I mean, I wasn't. I just was used to it. It was just part of my life. I had terrible allergies and great fluctuations in my energy. I'm a very energetic person. And it was just gone. So I like food. You know, I was interested in food always. And I thought, well, look at all these new foods I have to learn about and to eat. People talk about deprivation. I'm not deprived. I'm a foodie.
Right.
You know,
right.
I like good food. But that was really what happened. And my colleagues, my pastry chef colleagues, all of a sudden, it was like, oh, you're no. And I was voted out of the club because then vegan and pastry chef were oxymorons. They did not go together.
Right.
I started looking in the stores and at cookbooks, and I could understand why. I mean, unless you liked something that was brownish and dry and heavy or sticky or gummy, you're out of luck.
Right. Exactly.
You were just out of luck. And, you know, frankly, I would rather not eat something than eat something that's awful. And the things that were masquerading as cakes, you know, if I want couscous, I'm going to eat couscous. I don't want that as my birthday cake. So then I tried to find some books because as I had gone through culinary school, I was used to being able to go to a book and get a formula. And the first generation vegan baking books were really lacking, to say the least. I mean, you don't have to be a pastry chef to know that one cup of granulated sugar and one cup of liquid sweetener are quite different and will probably mess things up. So I really,
What tool did you, I know what I used to compensate for that. What did you use to compensate for that? If you were trying to substitute a cup of a healthier sweetener, like a maple syrup, or a cup of sugar, what would you do?
Well, I didn't really try to compensate in that way. I have a formula for that now. I mean, you can add, you know, you add more dry ingredients, for example, and I find that all of the natural sweeteners are not interchangeable. What I call the natural really means nothing, as you know. It's just a marketing term. But the unrefined sweeteners, you know, I just finished teaching my vegan baking boot camp last week, and we go over this in depth. So each of the unrefined, and that's all I use, I don't use white sugar. All of those sweeteners have different flavor profiles and different properties, and you need to get to know what they are so that you can work with them. And they are not necessarily interchangeable. And that was more what I was working on when I was developing recipes. So I like maple syrup. I like to use maple syrup in a cake that is sweetened with a liquid sweetener. I find that rice syrup does not bake well. You know, it does not make a good cake.
Right.
Agave certainly doesn't. And obviously barley malt molasses, you know, unless it's a spice cake where you use a little.
Right.
So these are all very different.
Right.
The one characteristic that all of the unrefined sweeteners have is that they are more hygroscopic, so they hold more moisture, and that can be a good thing, meaning our baked goods are moist. But if you don't bake them properly, they can be gummy and too chewy, or not really chewy, but just gummy and sticky. So I got to know the taste and what works. And when you get to know the properties of the sweeteners, for example, as I said, the rice syrup is not good in cakes. It's not sweet enough, and it's too heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm talking about to my taste. You know, everybody comes into this differently, but I feel that the feedback I get, it's not really my opinion anymore, but I've been doing this for for 23 years, and I've had a lot of feedback from people, is that my desserts are a bit more refined than a lot of than many vegan desserts. Vegan desserts have come a long way.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't say across the board that fits anymore. There are a lot of people doing wonderful, wonderful desserts. But I thought, well, I know that rice syrup doesn't work well in cakes, but it makes cookies very hard. So I was thinking, well, it doesn't work in cookies. It makes them very hard. Well, I happen to like crisp cookies, crispy cookies.
Uh-huh.
Oh, there we go. There weren't very many very crispy. I'm not talking about, you know, hard as a rock cookie. I'm talking about beautiful, crisp, twill kind of a cookie, lace cookie, in the marketplace. And I developed an orange ginger crisp that is in my book by using rice syrup and maple syrup in combination. The maple is the sweetener. The rice syrup gives it this crisp, so they're very thin. They can even be bent into a twill shape when they're warm. And that's what I started to do. I wanted to know, what does this do, and what does that do, and what combination of flowers is going to give the nicest crumb to a cake. And I don't have one standalone replacement when people ask for replacements. Dairy-free milk is very easy today.
Right.
There are so many in the marketplace. I don't have one standalone for eggs, but baking powder, baking soda, and vinegar are leaveners. And vinegar also adds to the tenderness, the nice crumb of a cake. So I find that that's works beautifully. And actually, only when, I think about what are the functions of an egg. An egg has many functions. It really, the leavening aspect of an egg only comes into play when the egg white is beaten and folded in. So it's not as important as we may think across the board.
Well, I thought it has a binding effect even when it's not. I guess it has a binding effect, but not the leavening effect.
The egg?
Right.
Well, yes, that's one of the functions. It binds, it adds liquid, and there's some fat in it, and then the leavening. So what I did was I said, okay, I need some extra baking powder. I need some extra baking powder. I need some fat. I need a little extra flour or starch. And there's your egg, really. If you think about it, it makes sense.
Right. Well, I know what I had done when I was doing it, and I was trying to look at a traditional recipe and then switch around. What I found worked was I would take unsweetened coconut and put it in the food processor and make it very fine so it was more granulated, so it had the texture, a little bit of sugar. And I would add some of that into the batter, and that gave it some of the flakiness or the crumbness that I felt a lot of the cakes would lose. But I wasn't using the vinegar, so maybe the vinegar would do that.
Well, you were kind of ahead of your time because a lot of people like using coconut flour now. And I get a lot of, I get a lot of questions from people, and one of the when I get a lot of the same question, I know something's going on. And I've had many queries about, well, I'm using coconut flour to replace X percentage of my regular flour, the flour I'm used to using, and my batter seems to be more dry. Well, coconut flour, which is really just finely ground coconut flakes, is very drying. So you do need to add some more liquid, or people who are using a larger proportion of it.
I was putting in the maple syrup, so there was the liquid.
Right. So, I've evolved. I feel that people who are interested in learning or interested in furthering, going further with what they can do, there's always something to learn.
Right.
And I've certainly had a lot of schooling, and I've been doing this for so long, but there's always, things change somewhat. I haven't veered off using organic, fair trade ingredients, and my basic principles are in place. But in my first book, which was written shortly after I changed my diet, where I was feeling a bit more, how you get sometimes in the beginning, really
more strict.
I'm not going to use any granulated sugar,
primarily
maple syrup. And I still think maple is a wonderful sweetener. I look at not only the processing of an ingredient, how it's processed, but how it was used historically. Maple was always a sweetener. The colonists called it Indian sugar.
Right.
So that fit for me, and I like what it does for baked goods. For my next book, people were requesting more granulated sweetener.
Right.
And so I incorporated, I have recipes that use organic sugar and what I call organic dark whole cane juice, which is granulated, which is...
A brown sugar?
No, I don't use brown sugar. I use Sucanato Rapidura are two brand names, and it's the whole sugar cane that is crushed and liquefied, the liquid, crushed to a liquid, and then spun or whatever the particular proprietary process is. It's like making maple sugar from maple syrup.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this dark, you know, you have the whole cane sugar. Now, people, it depends. You know, everyone is looking from their own point of view. People who are looking for really healthy desserts will tend to go to that sugar, is what I'm finding. But I don't feel there are two problems for that with that for me. One, it has all of the molasses is intact. The molasses has never been removed and put back in, which is the case with brown sugar. It's intact. So you have a strong molasses taste that doesn't necessarily work in a lemon cake, to my taste. Mm-hmm. People have different tastes. But it adds a beautiful layer of flavor in a chocolate cake. Organic sugar is the same thing, but more of the molasses has been taken out. So it's more neutral.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's, you know, there's a choice for people. Over time, I realized, as I was using Sucanat, that it needed to be ground, really. It was, it's coarse. You know, organic sugar is, even the more fine organic sugar that you find in the marketplace, still the crystals are larger than in a white sugar.
Uh-huh.
And depending on the brand you buy, you have to grind it or not. But, you know, the whole cane sugars, I believe you have to grind. And then when you get, you know, if you're interested in looking at desserts in history, I like food in history. Well, during the war, wartime people were using vinegar to leaven cakes. They didn't have eggs.
Uh-huh.
And the kind of sugar I'm talking about, this dark whole cane, is found in other ethnic cuisine, like jaggery, for example.
Right.
Is this sugar just in a different form? So it becomes really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm very fascinated with it. I love trying to play with recipes and work it out. And I want you to share one. I know you agreed to share one of your
mm-hmm.
recipes with us. But we're going to take a 2-minute break first.
Okay.
And when we come back, I'd love to go into your recipe.
Absolutely.
Okay? Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Progressive Radio Network each day for the brightest progressive minds in the world.
Hello, I'm Carol Brier, host of Community Currency, connecting people, ideas, important information, nurturing human renaissance, seeking to transform disintegrating empire into healthy, problem-solving, creative, evolutionary, peaceful communities. To hear us, listen every Thursdays, 5 to 6 p.m. on Progressive Radio Network.
South of the border.
Are you one of the millions caught up in that first world rat race? Well, I used to be. I'm John Mueller, host of the Expat Files, where we discuss what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire down in Latin America. Can you really live like a king down here on a crummy Social Security check? What about starting a business or buying a house or love and romance? Just tune in Monday and Wednesday at 8 p.m. and send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And to listen to any of my past shows, just go to progressiveradionetwork.com/archives and click on the link to the Expat Files. Nos vemos.
I kiss a smile upon her face.
Is someone driving you crazy? Do you have a cheating boyfriend or girlfriend? An ex you can't let go of? An obnoxious boss? Adult kids who won't listen? I'm Hollis Polk, and I fix relationship problems. Your life, your relationship with Hollis Polk offers you practical solutions for all sorts of people problems. Listen and call in Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, or download the podcast at progressiveradionetwork.com.
The Progressive Radio Network, your home for progressive thinkers.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm happy to be here with my guest, Fran Costigan, who is a vegan pastry chef, and she is world-renowned. She's, you know, teaching all over the place. She has a few books out. Her most recent book is called More Great Good Dairy-Free Desserts, Naturally. And it's a wonderful book with many, many recipes and lots of tips on how to adjust recipes and substitutions, and it's just, you know, filled with lots of information. So, Fran, are you here?
I'm here. Thank you, Bhavani. You know, I wanted to mention that when I wrote this book, what I wanted, I'm a teacher. You know, I'm a cooking teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And because we were talking earlier about the misinformation or confusion around vegan desserts,
mm-hmm.
or vegan in general, this book was designed as a complete course in vegan baking, and that's why it builds. You've seen the book.
Mm-hmm.
I have a front section where if people want to substitute gelatin and
right
agar,
here,
can do it, but
great.
You need to really know that these are foundation ingredients because we don't have eggs and we don't have certain ingredients. So I started with creams and gels and then go, and it is really a course.
Well, no, it was so great because when I was making the brownies, I didn't have any arrowroot. I mean, I don't know where it was, but somewhere in my kitchen it's probably there, but I couldn't find the arrowroot. And so I looked, and I was there it was. I could substitute cornstarch,
mm-hmm.
you know,
exactly.
And I had my organic cornstarch, which I would recommend. If you're going to use cornstarch, it only be organic.
Oh, I'm with you on that, 100%.
You know, but it was equal amount, so it was like, yes.
Right. You know, a funny thing happened last week in Vegan Baking Boot Camp, and I can't think of a country in the world at this point. It's thrilling where someone has not come. There was someone from Turkey this time and Venezuela. Had people from Israel
at the Natural Gourmet.
And uh-huh. not everyone is vegan, but, you know, vegan desserts or vegan food work for people who are lactose intolerant, allergic to eggs. There's so many reasons
right.
that they work or are eliminating cholesterol from their diet, even parve desserts and, you know, certain religious. It happens to be. But in the way that you said earlier, you know, we want to eat with our eyes. We want food to be beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I'm serving vegans, I don't say, oh, you need to taste this. You're not going to believe what's not in it or it's vegan. Because
right.
no matter how good it looks or tastes, something happens in people's minds. So I let the food speak for itself. And I tend to have people calling me and say, my husband wants this cake that he had at the office, that chocolate cake. He said it was the best chocolate cake he ever had. And automatically, because it's what I'm used to, I start questioning, well, is soy a problem? What about
mm-hmm.
almond milk? And this woman did not know what I was talking about. She just said he said it was a great cake. The chocolate cake to live for in this book, I hope you'll make it because that's amazing. It's just amazing. You know, it's great that you thought about the organic cornstarch and that I did put that in the front of the book. And just recently, I decided to test tapioca starch because some people don't want to use cornstarch, even organic. They just
mm-hmm.
don't want to use corn products at all. And
some people have allergies to corn even.
Right.
So.
It's a very high
mm-hmm.
allergen food. So I feel that arrowroot is really, that's my go-to starch because, you know, in my idea of health, it's the most healthful. But there are a few recipes, like the one I'm going to give now, where it just doesn't work. It doesn't work. The texture of the pudding will be too stringy is really what it's called in pastry lingo, but, you know, it's like slimy. And I wanted to see if tapioca starch, because I had gotten a sample of organic tapioca starch, and it worked beautifully.
Uh-huh.
So there's an option for
right.
people who can't use cornstarch. in this pudding, chocolate pudding, which was not as tricky to convert to a vegan version as a cake, for example. But what I'm trying to do is really twofold. I want to, you know, if it's good for what it is, that's not good enough for me. I want whatever I make has to be great, or I'm not putting it out there.
Right, right.
And I want it to be healthful. I'm not using, soy margarine. I'm not using margarines, and I'm not using boxed egg replacer. I'm using ingredients that are as wholesome as possible. That's
right.
Really the way I feel about
it. Once I bought an egg replacer,
mm-hmm.
that box, I probably have a shelf life. It's been sitting in my cabinet.
Yeah.
I never can bring myself to use it. Because
people love it, but when you look at the ingredients,
exactly.
It's all starch. We don't need that. We can put that into our recipes, and there's a new one on the market now that actually can, from a very good manufacturer. I really love their products, but I'm quite surprised. It contains soy. It contains corn syrup solids. It's pretty shocking.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, if you can get around it. So this is my I call it mighty satisfying chocolate pudding because I happen to really like chocolate pudding.
Uh-huh.
And the recipe, the first ingredient is 1/2 cup of organic sugar. And in my book, I write light natural cane sugar. So organic sugar, you can find that anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Trader Joe's has it, Whole Foods has it, and there are many brands.
And if somebody wanted to substitute maple syrup, could they?
No, not in this recipe. Not in this recipe.
Mm-hmm.
What you can substitute is the whole cane juice, the whole cane. But, you know, what I say sometimes is when people say, can I take the flour out of this recipe and make it a gluten-free cake?
Make something else.
Make something else.
Now,
I have other, you know, I have puddings where you could. You probably can play around. What I would imagine, I don't want to say yes, you can, if I haven't tested it. Because
right.
I feel very
right.
responsible about giving recipes.
Right.
However, when you see the amount of liquid in this recipe, clearly you could do that. But it's organic sugar. Either organic sugar is the closest in taste to white sugar, so this will give you the sweetest pudding, or the dark whole cane, which I really like. 6 tablespoons of unsweetened Dutch process cocoa powder. To my taste, the Dutch process is better, tastes better in this recipe. I feel that you need more fat and more sugar when you're using the non-alkalized cocoa powders, but this is a very personal thing. People who grew up on Hershey's, was it Hershey's cocoa powder?
Yes.
Yeah, prefer that.
Mm-hmm.
And 1/4 teaspoon of salt. I use fine sea salt. You know, if someone wants to use white sugar, they can use white sugar. I'm proposing the ingredients that are important to me.
Of course.
But, you know, I my recipes say organic flour, fine sea salt. Anything will work.
Mm-hmm.
And then that goes, the sugar and cocoa and salt go into a heavy medium saucepan. And you just mix them with a whisk. I cannot be without a whisk. And then you gradually stir 1/3 cup of water into the saucepan and mix it. Really use a spatula at this point because it'll be heavy until the ingredients are moistened. And why I do that is it's really like blooming the cocoa powder and it just creates a nicer taste. That's one of the steps. It takes an extra 5 seconds, but it really helps.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we want to use some milk substitute. You can use 2 cups of soy milk or almond milk or, you know, coconut milk, any non-dairy milk that you like.
Mm-hmm.
And let me go back to it. You've got your paste now, and then you bring over medium heat. You bring this mixture to a boil, stirring frequently because you don't want the chocolate to scorch. Then you reduce the heat to low and stir in 1 2/3 cup of whatever non-dairy milk you're using. And you simmer for 2 minutes, just whisking from time to time and watching the pot carefully because chocolate does scorch. The next ingredient is 2 ounces of a non-dairy chocolate broken into small pieces or finely chopped. If you like something that's sweet, you can use a semi-sweet chocolate. I happen to like very dark chocolate, so I tend to use that.
Right.
And you just add this, and it should start to melt very quickly because it's the mixture in the pot is very hot at this point, and the chocolate is finely chopped. So you get that dissolved, and then in a small bowl, you combine 3 tablespoons of organic cornstarch or tapioca starch, with tapioca flour, sometimes it's listed as, in the remaining 1/3 cup of the non-dairy milk. And that's called making a slurry. So you get that dissolved, and you put your whisk into the pot, and whisking constantly, you add the slurry, the dissolved starch, into the chocolate mixture. And you'll feel it start to thicken pretty immediately. And you cook, you bring it back up to a boil, and you cook the pudding for about 30 to 45 seconds. You really want it to boil for 30 to 45 seconds. That will cook out the raw starch taste, and it means that the starch will do its thickening magic. You remove the pot from the heat and stir in 2 teaspoons of vanilla extract. I always add extracts off heat because either they cook out if you cook with them or they become bitter. And that's the whole thing. But and it's absolutely delicious. I like this pudding warm, but you can refrigerate it up to 2 days, that's for sure. Now, I taught this. This was a recipe in a class I had, many classes I've had, but in one instance, the students making it made a mistake. And, you know, sometimes when people don't read a recipe all the way through, which is really one of the number one rules, right? Read it all the way through. And
before
if it doesn't make sense, it's likely that it really doesn't make sense, that there's a mistake. So do that and get everything together. But in this case, the group that was making the pudding didn't notice. They saw water, 1/3 cup of water, and somehow the 2 cups of non-dairy milk became water. So I tasted this pudding, and I said, wow, this is the best I've ever tasted. What non-dairy milk did you use? They said, non-dairy milk, we used water. So actually, it's not as on the one hand, it's not as nutritious because non-dairy milk has some good nutrition in it. But for people who are looking for a very lean pudding, obviously it's going to be less caloric and very lean. I feel that the chocolate flavor just bangs out of that. So I really enjoy it very much. In that case, I would reduce the 2 cups of non-dairy milk to about 1 2/3 cup. And it's fabulous. And I mean, it couldn't be easier.
Right.
It really couldn't be easier. So I like this with almond milk. I think that's my favorite. I like the...
I tend to use almond milk a lot more than soy milk myself.
Yeah, almond milk adds a lovely
unsweetened
sweet...
one.
Oh, I only use unsweetened.
Right. I'm saying it for my listeners.
Yes, that's a good thing for your listeners to know. You know, not too long ago I took a box. I have cartons of every non-dairy milk possible.
Right.
And I line them up, and I thought, every once in a while, it really pays to review the ingredients, even...
Right, because they change them.
They change.
And
the big companies are buying the little companies,
right.
And so it happens very often.
Right.
And I was just stunned. I was like, what is canola and palm oil doing in my rice milk? What is this doing in my whatever? So I'm making my own rice. I mean, I have cartons of milk in my pantry. They're certainly convenient, but I'm inclined to make my own rice milk. I cook up extra brown rice.
Right.
And I make rice milk, and I have an ordinary blender. I don't even have a high-speed blender. I strain it. Then I have what's in the strainer is my rice cereal or rice cream. Add fresh water, add some vanilla, maple syrup. I love to make a chai rice milk, and you can make it as thin or as thick as you want. You can do that with almond milk, too. But almond milk is becoming my favorite non-dairy milk to use now, except for people where nuts are a problem, and that certainly comes up.
Right.
So we have a lot of choices. I like coconut milk beverage, which is different from coconut milk in the can.
Right.
That's also, you know.
Like coconut water, you mean?
Not coconut water, no. This is, it looks just like a carton of soy milk or rice milk.
Uh-huh.
So Delicious is one of the, Turtle Mountain is one of the more commonly found brands, and it comes unsweetened.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, when almond milk is a problem, I use that. It doesn't really impart a coconut taste, and it's just an option for people. You know, I have no problem with using, soy is not a problem for me, but I use organic, non-GMO, whole
right.
soy.
Right.
For people who have problems with soy, then I go to almond milk or this, I call it coconut milk beverage, to differentiate from the coconut milk in the can, which I
right.
do use.
Right. For
but,
cooking.
You know.
Right.
So like that. So it gets really interesting.
Now,
we could talk a lot about this.
One thing I noticed you don't use a lot of, and I've only started using it a lot, you know, in the last few years, is coconut oil as my fat.
Uh-huh.
Do you don't use that much, or?
I don't use that much, but I have changed my fat. Many people are using coconut oil as their fat now. And
yeah.
certainly I'm a holdout. At the natural
form. It's a great substitute for, you know,
yeah, well,
butter type.
I really prefer extra. The recipes in my book specify organic canola oil. When mm-hmm. canola oil is organic, it is not genetically modified. It's not a fake thing.
Right. I know.
And it's
so
fine.
Worried about that.
And
I
it's
agree.
It's got a good health profile, but you need to buy organic.
So, Fran,
but I
we're
use,
running out of time.
Okay. I use olive oil.
Finish.
I don't. Coconut oil is not my.
It's not
where I'm at
right now.
Yeah.
I like a mild extra virgin olive oil.
For baking, too.
For baking. It's
wow.
the bomb. It's
wow.
the
I'll
best. Going forward,
okay.
my next book, I'm using extra virgin olive oil.
All right. So before we go, I want you to share your website with people and how they can get in touch with you.
Absolutely. It's my name. It's www.frankostigan.com.
And is spelled C-O-S-T-I-G-A-N.
Right, C-O-S-T-I-G-A-N. And you can get in touch with me. My schedule is there. My email address is there. Beautiful photos of wedding cakes and all kinds of things are there. And I'm on Facebook, Fran Costigan. You can find me there. But feel free to ask me any questions because I do answer them.
Wonderful. Fran, thank you. You are a wealth of knowledge, and I'm sure you'll get some people asking you some questions from this.
I hope so. It was
myself
a pleasure
included.
To talk to you, Bhavani. I look
thank
forward to
you.
Seeing you.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll see you again next week. If you want to send me an email, you can do that at Bhavani, B-H-A-V-A-N-I, at iegreen.com. Have a great week, and I'll be with you all next Wednesday at 5. Have a good one.